Right. I said earlier on that I would be having a conversation with Samson Ndeikwila, who is the author of The Agony of Truth, the book that he wrote in 2014. And that book is based on his experiences when he left the country for exile, or when he left to the country to go and fight, to go and be part of the struggle, be part of the struggle. But for some other reason, things went on there, and then he couldn't be part of what he had gone to be. So we have him here in the studio today so that he can explain to us, talk to us about some of the things that we may not know, some of the things that went on there and most people are not comfortable to talk about. And most people would want those things to be buried deep, deep. But we have him here. And this is a conversation that may not be so comfortable for him or for other people who are out there. But we will try to help him go along.
So thank you very much.
Yes.
Eagle FM.
Yes.
Yeah, as you said, my name is Samson Ndeikwila. And I wrote that book in 2014. But then I did some revision and also update some of the information this year.
Yeah, so I understand that you added three chapters.
Yeah, I added three chapters.
Yeah, because the copy that I have and the one that I used for the review that I did back then, I still have that one. So I think I need to get a new one.
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, those three chapters, I left them out at that time because I thought they were so powerful.
Mm.
And also they would touch so many people. I reserved them. So now this year, they are now part of the book.
Okay.
So I left this country when I was very young, in the late 60s. In fact, the purpose at that time was to go and study. But then when we went into exile, many things were happening in Southern Africa.
So, you know, you left from which part of the country?
Yeah, in fact, I was a student at Ongwe Diva Mission Secondary School at that time.
Yeah.
So, just we left after we wrote our junior secondary examinations.
Mm.
That was in November, of course, 1965.
Mm. Yeah.
A long time ago. So, now the purpose as young.
Yeah, but by leaving, how did you skip the country?
Yeah, you know, Ongwe Diva is now in Oshana region. We walked from Ongwe Diva. It took us about a week until we reached Rundu, Kurenkuru in Western Kavango.
Yeah.
That was on foot. But then in order also to make it easy for us to reach.
And how many were you then?
Yeah, we were seven.
Seven.
Yeah, we were seven.
Mm.
So now in
order. Do you still remember some of the people who were with you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was Isaac Shikongo, known as Pondo. He was a very important all famous commander, but he died in Angola.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Videart Tashia, combat name Nakada.
Mm-hmm.
Also, he died in Angola during the Kasinga attack. That was 1978.
8 years.
So the one was Thomas Shimi. In fact, that one died in Ghana as a student. And then there was November Mthoko, he's around.
Hmm.
So then there was Naftali Mbubulu, he's still around.
Mm-hmm.
Myself, in fact, we were six years.
So three are gone.
Three are gone, and three of us are still around.
Mm-hmm.
So we left, as I said, on foot from Ongwe Diva up to Kurenkuru. And then from Kurenkuru, we had to join the contract labor company, Wenela. So from Kurenkuru, we got into the tracks of Wenela from Kurenkuru up to Rundu. So in Rundu, we had to join the contract labor system. So
but how old were you then?
I was around 16, 17 years by that time. Yeah. But now, because we were very young, again, we had to negotiate with the recruiting officers. Yeah, we endeared them ourselves to them. We made friends for some days. And then we really pleaded with them, not with them, but with one of them, that, okay, we want really to go to South Africa to work in the mines. So we were selected, all of us, during that the whole, it's very, very humiliating recruitment process, because people were looking at your physical fitness. You had to do a lot of exercises and so forth. So, in fact, we passed that test. And then we had to board, again, trucks from Rundu up to Oshakawe. It was from Oshakawe where we were loaded into a cargo plane. Up to Francistown in Botswana. But now, because our purpose was not really to go to the mines, we want to go and join SWAPO in exile. We left the compound in Francistown to go to the SWAPO office in the township. But now, at that time, it was very, very difficult, because Wenela complained to the Botswana government that SWAPO is poaching people from their compound. So it was very, very tense. And also the SWAPO representative who was in Francistown at that time was expelled from Botswana. The SWAPO representative, he was Maxton Joseph. He was expelled from Botswana because he was stealing people from the compound. So we went at that time. So now SWAPO could not accept us. They say, okay, now you have really to make a plan and come through another route, but through Wenela, we cannot accept you because we have got a problem here at our hands. So we had to go and hide ourselves in southern Botswana, Mahalapie, I think for more than a month. We had to lay down very low. And then when we emerged, we went to the police station telling them that, oh, well, we are coming just fresh from Windhoek through Hobabis and Maun. So we went to go and further our studies. So now what we did, we changed our names, our ages, everything. So there was no problem. So we were accepted as asylum seekers. So when we went to Francistown with the new names, with a new identity, so we were accepted. So it was at that time. Now, when we reached Francistown again, we found a lot of our friends, old friends from Oshigambo High School, people like Nangolo Mbumba, Naha Sangula, Helmuth Angula, and many others. So we became a big group there. And then we were recruited now to go and write a test in Francistown. We passed the test, a lot of us. In fact, some of the guys didn't make it. Those of us who made it, we went to Nkumbi International College in Zambia. We went to Nkumbi International College in Zambia. That was now 1966. And towards the end of that year was now the story of Ngulumbashi. And some of us, we really felt that with our education at that time, we have really to go and join plan. That's what we did.
So if when you got to Zambia, yeah, I think we need to get to the three chapters and the brief of what went on there. Because I understand you later went to train as a pastor. So can we have the events? You got to Zambia.
Yes.
What went on there?
I went to Zambia and to Nkumbi International College. Then after Ungulumbashi, we demanded to go and join the plan to be trained militarily. So now we were taken to Tanzania, Kongwa military training camp. So when we went there, now is when we realized that things were not okay. So some of us now...
So how did you realize that things were not okay?
You see, the way that camp was attacked, because initially we were told that it was we who attacked the Boers, but later on, it came very clear to us that we were attacked. And that was, but now before that again, there was this interception of Group 2 in Kavango. They were 10 men, well-trained guerrillas, but then all nine of them were captured. Only one escaped. That was in March. And then in August, we were attacked. But again, now the other part is that in March that year, it was when the president of SWAPO, Sam Nujoma, came to Namibia.
From Zambia.
From Zambia.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was in March, and that caused a lot of havoc.
But was he not supposed to be in exile then?
I mean, he was in exile. He was a chief commander of plan, but he came by air to Vindo. And that is really the thing which brought a lot of problems.
And nothing happened.
Nothing happened.
He was not arrested.
He was not arrested. That was now the big question in at Kongwa. Why? Why should he go? Why is he not arrested? Why the others, all these others were arrested?
So did he come here before the capture of Group 2 or after?
It was the same month, at the same time, March, around March 2023. It was a coincidence. Which up to now I cannot understand it.
So it hasn't been explained.
So now it was that incident which broke up Kongwa. Many people left that, oh, well, our struggle has been compromised. Our armed struggle has been compromised.
And why would they say that the struggle had been compromised?
You know, those guys, a lot of them were not educated, but if you listen to them arguing, they were very deep. They say, okay, now, for example, Simbaye, I think you know about Simbaye, the president of KANU at that time. He was a school teacher.
Yeah.
And then he was arrested. Mandela and others were arrested. And these people were not even a chief in command of anything. So people were asking, why was Nyoma not arrested?
Yet
and
he
then
came
his
back.
His people, the soldiers, were intercepted in Kavango. They were all arrested. But the chief in commander came to Vinduk and went back to Zambia, not arrested. So now that caused many people to leave the camp.
So that but let us get this one clear.
Yeah.
He flew and landed here.
Yes.
And do you know where he went to?
Nobody really knows. But if you read in his book how he was treated, he said he was given a red carpet and all these type of things.
By who?
By the South African intelligence and representative of the South African government. So now what I'm saying is that was one factor which made many, many people to leave the camp and say, well, our struggle has been compromised. We better go and look for our further studies. So we wrote a very strong memorandum. Some of us now that situation should be investigated, that there was something not right in the camp. But the other thing about the attack at Ungulumbashi, the second in command of SWAPO, a combat named Castro, he was arrested with Group 2 in Kavango. But then he emerged. He came to Lusaka.
Yeah, I remember in your book you are talking about him coming with a lot of money.
Yes, coming with a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then there were other people who were at Pretoria, especially the late Chief Rirwako. He was arrested and was in Pretoria with his colleague Vena Mamukwe. So they came to Lusaka and said, no, we have seen this guy you are saying is your commander here now. we saw him there in Pretoria in the company of South African security police. Something is not right. Yeah. But again, he was at Ongulumbashe.
And he survived.
And he survived.
And he escaped.
That was the main thing in our memorandum we wrote to the Tanzanian government. But then there was also some sort of tribalism in at Kongwa, because there were two blocks. There was the Kaprivi group, former members of KANU, and then the SWAPO, who was mainly Oshiwembo speaking. So now these two groups, there were two blocks. I think because of the language barrier also, there was a hell of tension between them. So this one issue also, we said the issue of Castro should be investigated, and then tribalism in Congo should be investigated. Yeah, and then we called for a Congress. You know, we really need to have a Congress here in exile.
So and which year was this?
That was 1968.
Okay.
Yeah. So the Tanzanian, when the memorandum was taken to the Tanzanian representatives of the camp, they said, no, this is a very good document.
Mm.
What we are going to do is that you young guys, we are going to take you to Dar es Salaam so that you can discuss with your representatives there. We were very happy. So they put us in the Land Rover, and we drove to Dar es Salaam to explain now and to discuss with our representatives, political representatives in Dar es Salaam. That was now the late Peter Nanyemba and the late Moses Garweb. But when we got to Dar es Salaam, there was no discussion. We were just put in prison in Dar es Salaam.
And it was orders?
The Tanzanian authorities are saying that was order from SWAPO. They say that we were rebels. So we should be put in what they call a preventative custody.
Mm.
So we were there for 15 months. And when we smuggled a lot of letters to Nyerere complaining, why should we be kept in detention in Tanzania, not in South Africa? Tanzania, we respect Tanzania so much, but we are really disappointed to find ourselves detained in Tanzania. And we put a lot of facts also in the letters we used to send to Nyerere. In fact, the police used to help us to smuggle these letters out.
Mm.
Yeah. So we heard later that the Tanzanian government agreed with us, and they pleaded with SWAPO that we should be released and the Congress should be held, but SWAPO refused. So finally, the Tanzanian government told SWAPO that, oh no, we cannot keep these young people anymore. What should we do with them? So I said, no, we don't want them. That's why after our release, we were taken to a place, a small place near the border of Tanzania and Burundi. So they said, okay, now here you are refugees. You are no more soldiers. Start your new life.
But did you go for training?
We were trained. I mean, some of the guys, because now at that time we were seven.
Yeah.
Myself, I was trained in Kongwa. But the other six were trained in China. Most of them were students, either at Ongwediva or at Oshigambo High School.
So these are six now. It was you and
six others. You mean the names?
Yes.
Yeah, it was Leonard Tapopi. He just died last year.
Mm.
And then there was Gilles Kati. He's around. There was Asa Mnakapa. He's late. There's Albin Kamati, he's still around. Peter Nyambari is around. Martin Msati is late. Yeah, so that was our group.
So the memorandum that you came up with, you don't know what happened. You don't know where it ended up.
In fact, we had a copy.
Mm.
But now when I came back to Namibia, because of the situation, I had to tear it up. Like a lot of my valuable documents, I had to destroy them.
Mm. No, I mean the one that you sent to the Tanzanian government. Did it get to the government, or it some other way? It ended up where it was not.
No, it got to the Tanzanian government.
So how did you get picked up now?
No, we get information from the police, even when they were interrogating us.
Yeah.
They had the copy. They said, this is a very nice, good document.
Yeah.
Yes. We understand. Yeah, but we were told to keep you until SWAP would tell us to release you.
So,
but now one thing which I have to mention is that now when we were now finally released, the same month, that was January, it was December 1969. Castro was brought in Tanzania.
As a detainee. Okay.
Yes, he was brought in. Mm-hmm. He was brought in. And some of us got a chance to meet him briefly. Then he said, well, I was cooperating with the Boers, but I told the Tanzanian government everything. If the Tanzanian government is honest, you see some of the SWAPO leaders here. That's what he told us.
Him now.
In fact, what he was trying to say was that he was not the only one who was collaborating with the Boers.
Mm.
Yeah, there are others.
All right. The spy issue. So it was real.
It was real.
Mm.
Yes, it was real. Because what you have to know is that this time was also the time of the Cold War between the West and the East.
Yeah.
So South Africa was not alone. South African intelligence was assisted by many others from the Western countries, including Israel.
Hmm.
So they infiltrated some of the liberation movements.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So when you spoke to this Castro guy, what was his real name?
It's Leonard Nangolo.
He's now gone, right?
Yeah, he died a few years ago. He was detained in Tanzania for 17 years.
17 years?
17 years.
That's then, from which year to which year?
That was 1969.
Yeah.
Yeah, then plus
17. About 70 something, yeah.
Yeah, then when he was released, Norway took him to get us a political asylum in Norway.
Mm.
So he used to come here in and out, but then died a few years ago.
But did he give you Norway. Names? Did he give any names to say if the Tanzanian government is honest, they are going, you will see a lot of SWAPO leaders here. Did he give any names?
You see, what he said was that why he broke down when he was being interrogated. He was given all information by the South African intelligence, all the minutes of SWAPO meetings in exile, names, all the particulars. Yes. Even also before the attack at Ongulumbashe, he met with the chiefs in Novemberland, two chiefs, one from Ndonga and one from Ngangela.
Mm.
And they told him that, you are wasting your time because the Boers have got all the information. So he said also they showed him documents of the meetings, SWAPO meetings in exile.
So before the attack, this was known.
In fact, Castro went to Yatoivo after his discussion with the two chiefs.
Yeah.
He went to Yatoivo.
And which chiefs are these ones?
It was Chief Shumbwa of Ondonga and Shimi of Ongangera.
Yeah.
So after he met those two chiefs at Ondangwa, he got all this information because they told him that that camp at Ongulumbashi is going to be attacked. Go and tell your people to relocate.
Yeah.
So he went to Yatoivo. Told Yatoivo so. Then Yatoivo said, no, go yourself to go and tell them. So he did all the efforts to go and tell Ithete in Ongangera.
Mm.
In fact, the story reached Ongulumbashe that it was going to be attacked, but they didn't relocate. Until his death, he was trying to maintain that he's not guilty as far as the Ongulumbashe attack was
concerned.
He was doing his best, but people ignored and they didn't. He was blaming Johnny Yauto. That Johnny Yauto was supposed to remove people, but he didn't. Until they were attacked. The story is that Castro was playing double-sided.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, but is it true? Can we be sitting here and saying what he was saying then is true?
What he was saying was true.
Mm.
Yes. Because even Yatoivo used to confirm it, that Castro came to him, told him to go and relocate to tell the people to be moved from Ngulumbashi. But then Yatoivo said, go and do it yourself. Yatoivo also himself admitted publicly.
Mm.
That's what happened.
So this attack was known, nothing was done, and people died.
In fact, two people died, and nine were arrested, others ran away.
Yeah, but in your conversation with Castro, did he say how he was captured?
I mean, about how he was captured, they were in Kavango.
Where was he when this attack was carried out?
At Ngulumbashi.
Yeah.
I don't know really where he was at that. But no, the thing is that, because, you know, they used to go and monitor the movements of the camp at night with the Boers, with him. The intelligence.
Him.
Yeah.
So he would be moving around with the people who would attack the camp.
Yes. From Ruakana.
Is this confirmed?
Yes. He didn't deny it. He said he was not alone in cooperating with the Boers.
But how did he come to be part of them? How was he recruited?
He was recruited in Pretoria when he was arrested in Kavango with others, with eight others. In fact, he was the first to be taken from the group, and he was assaulted so severely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until he broke down and agreed to cooperate.
Mm.
Yeah.
So they sent him back.
They sent him back now to use him. Yeah. They sent him even back to Lusaka.
Mm. And this was the time when you say in your book that he came back with a lot of money.
Yes.
And there were no questions asked.
No. He created a story how he got that money. He said they attacked a Portuguese shop at Oshikango and they looted the money. So when he came to Lusaka, he shared the money. Part of the money he gave to the office, and then some of the money he was giving part of the money to NJ himself. Mm. In Kanyama location, Lusaka.
All right. So you also spoke about you and some others asking for a congress.
Yes. In that memorandum.
Yes. Can you explain?
Yeah, because
why were you asking for a congress?
Everything was confused at Kongwa. People were so demoralized and they really say, unless we make a new beginning, our struggle has been compromised.
So where was the leadership at this time?
The leadership was mostly in Dar es Salaam. Yeah.
So they never had time to come to the people?
No. They used to come there sometimes, but there was no real conversation.
Mm.
Because at that time now, after Nuyama came back to Namibia, after the attack on Ngulumbashi, after the story of Castro was circulating, a lot of young people left Kongwa to look for further studies. Some went to Kenya, some went to Uganda, some went to Ethiopia, etc.
Mm.
Yeah. So no, our struggle has been compromised. We have been sold out, in fact, what they said.
So what was this Congress supposed to be? Was it supposed to address newly vote in new leadership?
Yeah, now what happened was now after we demanded for a congress in that memorandum, and when things were now just hot within SWAPO, they convened this Tanga Consultative Congress of December 1969 to January 1970. Yeah, to put the house in order.
Mm.
Yeah. The the Tanga Consultative Congress was a reaction to what was happening within SWAPO, just to put off the fire.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
so what, they reorganized, of course, they reorganized SWAPO according to the information they gave out to the outside world.
So, but what exactly was happening within? What was it?
With whom?
Within the party. Was it a leadership crisis? What exactly?
The thing was just infiltration by the South African intelligence, because after Nkulumbashe and after Group 2, there was Group 3 and Group 4, which were sent again inside the country, but they were just intercepted as soon as they set their foot on the Namibian soil. They were intercepted. Yeah.
So who would know that these groups are going out?
You know, the thing is that if you read the book of, for example, of Helao Shitwete, everything was just on the radar of the South Africans. They could see everything. Even when you listen to their radio, South African Broadcasting Corporation.
Yeah.
When you listen to them, they got all information, even about the movements. They can say, okay, now there are some terrorists moving from Kongwa to Zambia. There are terrorists moving from Lusaka towards Namibia.
But were they getting this information from those who were within?
The thing is that there were two things. They were also having their people everywhere. You know, from the border between Zambia and Tanzania is Mbeya. They had their people there. If you read the book of Shitwete, when they were at Mbeya, they say they were suspecting a young Portuguese-speaking guy. But when he was arrested in Pretoria, this guy came as a witness. Yeah.
As a witness against
the against Shitwete, that I saw this guy at Mbeya with others. When they were moving, this Shitwete group, when they were moving from Lusaka at night to enter Namibia, there was a car following them at a distance. In the shops in Lusaka, they said they could really see that some white guys were monitoring them. So everything was just open.
So can we rightly point our fingers at the SWAPO leadership here to say some of them were feeding the South Africans?
That's my belief up to now.
Mm.
Because now when I look at events, you know, things were happening at a smaller scale in Dar es Salaam, I mean in Tanzania. If you look at the people who were being arrested, etc., it was a few. That was in the 1960s. Then we moved to Zambia in the 70s when many people came. If you look at what happened among the people and how they were arrested and how the whole group was dismantled, we really, some of us believe that it was the work of the South African intelligence and others. So then we moved from Zambia to Angola in the 80s. If you look what happened, we did see that it was the work of the South African intelligence just to destroy SWAPO from within. Yes.
All right. When the former president came here, right, when he wasn't supposed to, is it because he was not supposed to?
He was, I mean, if you are chief in commander of a guerrilla force, you were supposed to be target number one. Targeted by your enemy, whom you are fighting against physically. But this didn't happen. How can you explain that?
Yeah. So when he came back to Lusaka, what was the explanation?
Well, said they deported him back. They didn't want him. But if you read the documents of the South African officers themselves, they said after they interrogated him, they found that it was worthwhile. It was in their favor to send him back, then for him to arrest him. So they sent him back. They say he will serve us. They say he will serve them better when he's in exile among his people more than when they have arrested him. That's why they decided that, okay, let him go back so that he could serve them better. That's what they said.
But can one have access to such a document?
Go and read the book of Malad. He was a minister of defense, at that time. Yeah. Just read that part, why they sent him back and how they treated him.
So let us go
read, and read his own book also, his book also, where others wavered.
Yeah.
That part.
So let us go back to Castro. He has been brought in.
Yeah.
Right. And how was he? How was the relationship between you? Because it seems as if by then you knew, or some of the people there, including yourself, you knew it, that the issue of him coming back to Lusaka with a lot of money, you knew it. So how did you get along with him?
Because it was part in our memorandum, we said the case of Castro should be investigated.
Now this guy ends up together with you.
But yeah, the thing is that, he was in a different section in prison. He was in another wing. He was not put together with us. I think perhaps they have got their own reason why they put him. So now when he met this guy, it was at the clinic where he met this two of our colleagues, where he said he told the Tanzania government everything. And it was a very brief meeting. Yeah. Said he told the Tanzania government everything. And if the Tanzania government is honest, we'll see some of the SWAPO top leaders in prison. Yeah.
So the information in your book is from somebody else who met him.
Yeah, why not?
So you never had contact?
It was not me personally. And this is what I said in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there from the camp, or before we go there now, there was a rebellion. At what time was this in Zambia?
Yeah, you are now talking about this incident of 1976 in Zambia.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, what happened was that Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, the Secretary of State of the USA, after the independence of Mozambique and Angola, and that these two countries were now in the hands of pro-Soviet Union movements. That was MPLA and Frelimo. So the Americans were very much scared that communism is going to take over Southern Africa. So they came up now with a plan just to preempt that. So Henry Kissinger came to Southern Africa with a package. Yeah. And of course, he was seeing heads of state one by one.
Mm.
That was Seretse Khama, Kaunda, Nyerere. Saw them separately. Finally, he brought them together, where he was explaining that they're in a position to resolve the Southern Africa issue peacefully. Yeah. So he presented the package to them and said, well, there's no any other way. What you want is majority rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, after that discussion, after that decision, is when Kaunda said that there should be no more SWAPO fighting from the Zambian soil. They made it very clear.
Yeah.
So now this was told to the leaders in the offices, but the leaders didn't transfer this information to the fighters. What happened was that their guns were given to Savimbi. There was a shortage of food, of everything. So they start to parade to question what was happening.
What was the link here between SWAPO and Savimbi?
At this stage, because, you know, the thing is that Savimbi was pro-West, fighting MPLA, pro-Soviet Union. So now the West wanted it to strengthen the hand of Savimbi against MPLA so that communism cannot take over Southern Africa. So now the weapons of SWAPO was now being given to UNITA. Yeah, because SWAPO could no more fight from Zambia. Now, when these guys were now wondering what was happening is how they were rounded up. All of them, more than 1,000 of them, were rounded up and put in a concentration camp.
They were rounded up by who?
By the Zambian army and put in a big concentration camp.
Mm.
Lucky enough, two of them escaped. And we were in Kenya at that time, so they came to Kenya and they told the story. So we wrote, we assisted to write the whole story. So that information became known that there were Namibians being kept at Mboroma concentration camp.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that what related to the Chipanga rebellion?
You see, that story is again very, very interesting.
That story I'm very laughing. This is a very serious issue that we are discussing here.
Before Kissinger came to Lusaka, to Southern Africa, in fact, they sent the late Theo Ben-Gurion up to discuss with Swapo that, okay, America has a plan to resolve the whole issue of Southern Africa. Namibia will get independence, what. Yeah, but then the plan has also its own condition that if somebody who is going to stand in the way of this plan, that person should be done away with.
Mm.
Yeah. So Chipanga refused to be part of the plan because he knew that many young Namibians would die. Mm. Chipanga, Mifima, and others, they said this is a very, very dangerous because we're going to lose a lot of young people. So they refused and they were arrested. So what I'm trying to say is that please let us forget about this when stories are turned around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
so in actual fact, are you saying the Chipanga story is being turned around?
Yes.
So this were the people
who didn't want to buy into the Kissinger plan. Yes. But then the rest of the Swapo leadership and the Zambian government, they could see no any other way. So they had to arrest them so that the plan could go ahead.
Mm. All right. This is Eagle FM. I'm having a conversation with Samson Ndeiquila, the author of The Agony of True Truth. This is a book that he wrote in 2014, and he has added three chapters to the book. There are quite some revelations here, because the Chipanga rebellion, what is known now and what you are saying, they are two different things. Maybe you can just explain deeper.
So what I'm saying is that in the future, the name of Chipanga will be understood differently.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. So the three chapters in your book, what new information is there?
Yeah, the one is about Ongulumbashi.
Yeah.
That was in August 1966. But before Ngulubache, some other things happened.
Mm.
The first was the arrest of Group 2 in Kavango.
Yeah.
There were 10 young, well-trained guerrillas. There were 10. All 9 of them were arrested. Only one escaped.
Yeah.
The second was the decision of the International Court of Justice at The Hague, which was somehow in favor of South Africa. And then the last was now the attack on Ngulumbashi. If you look at all this, Swapo lost. So now they had now to make a plan as far as Ngulumbashi is concerned, that it was we who attacked the Boers at a place called Ngulumbashi. We killed 15 soldiers. We captured a lot of arms and ammunition. Mm. And many of
Do I understand you well here? Are you saying the attack was carried out by South African Defense Forces?
Yeah, that
they
it
are
was
the ones who moved in.
Yes, by air.
Okay.
From Rwakana.
And what exactly is the narrative now?
So now, in that chapter now, what I'm clarifying is that it was we who were attacked. It was not we who attacked the Boers, but it was the Boers who attacked us.
Mm.
Yeah.
And is that true, though?
That's the true picture. So now it was Emily Apollos in Dar es Salaam who wrote that story, saying it was us who attacked the Boers at a place called Ngurumbashi in western Namibia. 15 Boers were killed. So the world bought into that. That's why we have, first it was Namibia Day, every year celebrating the 26th of August, when we attacked the Boers. Yeah. Until even the UN accepted that lie, celebrating the day when the Boers were attacked by SWAPO. SWAPO opened fire first to the enemy. Yeah. So it's up to now.
Mm.
That's why up to now, Namibians are celebrating that day. But if they knew the truth, you cannot celebrate when you have been attacked.
But why is this truth not known until now?
Nobody said it.
And is this part of the information that came from Castro?
I mean, that the camp was attacked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just obvious. There was no camp, Boer camp, at Ngurumbashi. It was a planned camp which was attacked, but they say we attacked the Boers at a place called Ngurumbashi. There was no camp of the Boers at Ngurumbashi, or even the movements of the Boers at Ngurumbashi. So now the story was just turned around, and then what we are saying now, what I'm saying in the book is that, okay, we understand the reason for Emily Apollos to turn that story around at that time, to save certain purpose, so that people, even planned soldiers, either to Congo or somewhere else, should not be demoralized, even the people inside the country. So, but now that should not be part of our national history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. And the other information in the three chapters?
Yeah, okay, now let me just mention this.
Yeah.
So now what I'm saying in that book is that we were attacked on that date at Ngurumbashi, but we were also previously attacked at many other places. So what we have to do is that we should not put Ngurumbashi as a separate part of our history, but it should be part. What we need to do is to have a Namibia Day of Remembrance. We remember how we were attacked here and here and here and at Ngurumbashi, etc. We have just one day. In this way, now we also put our history together. We also involved all Namibians. But the moment we picked up just on Ngurumbashi, to other people in other parts of the country, for them it's a non-issue.
But why would this one battle in 1966 be picked up?
It is to keep the morale. It was a Cold War situation. Yeah, to keep the morale of your soldiers. And also, you have to create stories. Yes. That's why we said during the war, the truth itself suffers.
Yeah.
But you don't make that part of history. After the war, you see now how to get out of that lie. Yeah. So other chapters, the one is about now this Oshakati Bank bomb blast of 1988, February 1988. So now for many years, people just assumed it was South Africa who planted that bomb. But later on, though, the truth came out that it was a planned member who planted that bomb and who hit those people. When this truth came out now.
Now, this truth came from who?
It came from Judge Brian Olid. He was the defense lawyer of the man who planted the bomb. Yeah, so he wrote it very clearly in his book.
And it hasn't been disputed
yet.
No
way to dispute it. Because Olin, he was defense lawyer of all Namibian freedom fighters since 1966 up to 89. He was defense lawyer of all of them. Yeah, and he has the list how he defended to all of them in that book. So the last issue in that book was now the Oshakati bank bomb blast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he narrated it very, very clearly. Nobody can dispute that. It's an authoritative document. So now what I'm saying is that when people believe that it was South Africa, they used now to commemorate that day every year.
Mm-hmm.
Pastors used to go there and preach, and politicians used to go there and make statements. But now when the truth came, they all shy away. Like this year, 2019, there was no commemoration of Oshakati bank bomb blast. What I'm saying in that book is that we have, especially the church now, has to take the lead,
mm-hmm.
and to take the nation through some of deep, painful issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is we who killed fellow Namibians, not only at Oshakati, but we killed one another at many other places. Mm.
Actually, I wanted to ask, how was it like there in Zambia, in Tanzania, where people from the same country, not only from Namibia, but from Zimbabwe, South Africa, they would turn against each other? How were the killings there?
See, that's why I said at the beginning that the Western intelligence got a way to infiltrate liberation movement,
mm.
so that they can destroy themselves from within. It happened across the board in many of the liberation movements, killing one another from within, being fed with false information because they were not sophisticated enough. They believed those information and they act against their fellow freedom fighters.
Mm.
Yeah. For example, if you take the issue of the dungeons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very, I mean, if you look at the way interrogations were taking place, very, very primitive way.
Mm.
Yes. That's why the third chapter, which I added, is about the three young men who, at the point of their release, they were now being filmed to recite their confessions.
Mm.
They say, we are not going to repeat that.
And who are these three?
One is Cleopas Namshinga, one is Shuthenis Shitigwana, and the third one is Gerard Chodongoro.
Mm.
Intellectual guys. For example, Shuthenis was doing his PhD in agronomy in Britain, University in Britain. So he came for a holiday, so he was arrested. Chodongoro was a lawyer. And Namshinga was one of the intellectuals people knew inside the country. Yeah.
Mm.
So they said, we are not going to repeat those lies.
So they were arrested by the Swapo?
No, they spent years in the dungeons.
Yeah.
At the point of their release.
Yeah.
1989. It's now when they were told, with everybody else, to repeat your confessions. Yeah, they refused. In fact, the dilemma with Swapo was now, when things were now coming towards Namibia's independence, democracy was becoming stronger. Things were not going as they thought previously.
Mm.
Previously, they thought they would run Namibia with one party system and all these type of things. But now when the West came in with the UN plan, it is all democracy. So now they could not know how to handle the situation when people come back to Namibia. So now they thought they would have got evidence that the people we're having in the dungeons were really spy look.
Mm-hmm.
But now these three guys refused. Others recite the confessions. But where are those confessions today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these three, are they still alive?
No. What we are saying is that it was a choice.
Yeah.
You choose to recite your confession in front of a video camera, or then you are going to be released. If you refuse, then you are going to be killed.
So what was done to the three?
They were killed. That's the basic of the story. That's why you find the title of that chapter is Matters of Truth.
Mm.
Matters of Truth. People who died for the sake of the truth.
All right.
That's the third chapter.
It's 9:30, and I am having a conversation with Samson De Aquila, the author of The Agony of Truth, a book which he wrote in 2014. Is there anything else that you want to say before we finish?
Yeah, what I'm saying
is a long story. I know that we cannot exhaust.
Yeah,
now.
We can't exhaust. Yeah. So now what I'm saying is that if you look at the title, Agony of Truth, it's a book which is not comfortable to anybody who's reading it. It's causing.
I also had a lot of questions you remember, and then you had to write a response.
Yes.
And you have clarified some of those things. Yeah.
It's a book which is really causing a lot of pain to anybody who is going to read it. Mm. Because I mentioned some of the people's names, and I knew that these people, they have got their families, they have got children, they have got whatever.
Mm.
Some have even wives whom they didn't tell what they have been doing.
Yeah.
Now here they are being revealed that they have done ABC.
Mm. And some
people
of these
are coming to know that how their relatives have died.
Yes.
And all these type of things.
Mm.
So it's going to cause a lot of, but that's the only way, the truth.
Mm.
If we hide it, what do we mean?
Yeah. We need to confirm.
So if we hide the truth about our history, what is it that we cannot even hide? We can hide anything.
Yeah.
That's why we have got things like corruption here. Yeah. Where people are now have become experts in hiding things.
Yeah.
So we have to expose all these things really for democracy to flourish in Namibia.
Mm. No, I would like to say thank you for coming and sharing that with us at Eagle FM and with our listeners. And I hope it's not only you who has been there. We will be able to come up and say, this is how things were. And the versions that we have now, they are wrong. I think this is how we can heal. Thank you again for coming through and talking to us. It's a long story that we cannot exhaust in an hour.
Yeah, I want to thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. So thank you. Yes, I hope we shall have you back again some other time.
So thank you.
All right. Thank you so much.